All right, we are in business. What's going on, Joe?
Kicking it. Welcome to another episode of Flip the Record, episode 172 today. Thanks for coming, everybody. I'd like to open up, and I'm thinking about something here. Sorry, I'm a little distracted, but I'd like to open up and just remind everybody, fuck daylight savings time. It's an absolute scam. It's communist propaganda propagated by Big Agra, Purdue, Monsanto, the Krasenstein brothers. It's great when they give you that extra hour in the fall. Everybody gets to sleep in. It's nice and cozy, and the leaves are turning, and it's that hour they take away in the spring, that's the bit they don't talk about. You don't know what they do in that hour. Everybody's just like, oh, I lost an hour of sleep. This sucks. What are they putting in the food while everybody's sleeping?
On this week's episode of Tucker Carlson on X.
Yeah. Does it ever strike you? Have you ever been in a Russian grocery store? You ever thought about why Russian grocery stores are so much nicer than American?
I've never been in a Russian grocery store.
You didn't see that video.
So, no.
Dude, quick tangent. Tucker Carlson.
The one where he puts the quarter in the cart or whatever. Yeah, I did see that clip.
He did like take a stroll with me through the Russian like Kroger basically. And he's like, man, dude, you just got to watch it. There's so many funny bits of him just like being a dork in a grocery store. He like goes up to the bakery section and he grabs like a loaf of bread in a paper bag and just kind of like puts it up to his face. So it's in the bag and he's like, wow, smells fresh. It's just a goofball, man. He's like, he's got the camera up to him. He doesn't have like a cameraman with him. He's like doing it himself. And it's just so fucking weird, but it's a hilarious video, man. Absolute comedy.
Yeah, that's awesome.
All right. Let's see. Do we have news and notes today? I got maybe one or two things.
Yeah, let's hear it.
Our queen is back. Miss Kesha Rose has new music coming.
Yeah, did she put out a single?
No, I don't know about that. I can check as
we're talking
about it.
Never mind.
But I did see, well, I sent you a kind of promo video she made for kind of a tease towards a new album.
Yeah.
It's worth a watch. Let me just give you that much. Absolutely worth a watch for everybody interested in Kesha. You can almost hear the horny through the video. It's crazy.
Yeah, I feel like in her story arc, like she's gone full circle.
Yeah.
And now she should be back to where she started and make Animals 2 or whatever.
It feels a bit that way. I was scrolling through her Twitter the other day after I saw this video because that's where it was posted. And it feels like we've come around the corner, like you just said, where it was like there were some dark times lately. And let me put it this way, too. I think her gag order has expired.
Mm.
Like the inability to discuss that legal situation that she had, I think it's up. So maybe that's part of it. But yeah, it feels like she's coming around the corner, and you know, she's got to be what, mid to late thirties now.
I'll give you a quick check.
Maybe I would guess 36. So you know, she's not exactly 22 year old.
37.
TikTok. Yeah. But I feel like there's brighter days coming for Kesha. Very excited.
Yeah, no, I'm excited for her. Yeah, she puts out a new album. Should be interesting to see what direction she goes in. Because I feel like she's kind of done it all and now.
Yeah. Another note, I gave the new 21 Pilots track a few more listens. I'm very excited.
Yeah, it kind of grew on me too. I like that EDM style sound a little bit more than you. But
yeah,
the more I listened to it, I got excited for it.
What's really started to get me is that bit where the low horns in the beginning are doo 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 doo. And then they just drop in, welcome to Trench.
Yeah.
That's what's starting to get me. I'm like, all right, this is going to be pretty fucking cool. And the more I think about it, I'm like, this is an awesome opener for this album. Whatever it is, this is going to be an awesome opener. So
yeah, plus you know the concept's about to be, like, next level.
Yeah, the more I think about it, the idea of having this, like almost
four-album
stretch. Yeah, but this idea of, like, building a fantasy world inside your albums is so unique. Like, there's plenty of concept albums that do, I would say, adjacent things to this, but it's not so often that you have a huge, huge music group basically playing Harry Potter inside of their albums.
Yeah, imagine how hard that's got to be, too, to come up with, like, the storyboard for, like, oh, we're going to make great music, but then we're also going to weave in these underlying stories and this fantasy world and
right
characters
right.
and all this.
It takes a unique mind.
And at the end of the day, we're still going to have four songs you can play on the radio.
Exactly, right. Overcompensates. I mean, I don't know. I don't listen to a ton of, like, let's call it pop radio. And I would imagine this won't get onto, like, 80 or not. 89, Jesus. I have RIP. This won't get onto the riff, but.
Well, what 21 Pilots song would get onto the riff?
Heathens.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
You know, but I would imagine this is circulating pop radio. Anyways. Yeah, very excited. Going to be a kick-ass album.
Yeah, those guys rock.
Yep. Alrighty. Unless you got anything, let's get right into it.
Yeah, so Queens of the Stone Age Part 2, Era Vulgaris, Like Clockwork, Villains, and In Time's New Roman. We'll start out with Era Vulgaris, 2007.
Yeah, so this is an interesting point, right? They've been kind of pumping out music now. 5 albums in about 10 years, give or take.
A little less, yeah.
Yeah. This feels
four in 7.
This feels like the point in a band's lifetime that sometimes they've had their biggest albums to this point, and now it feels like they can maybe sit back and just put out music, you know, stuff that isn't to the highest standard, to the standards that they held Songs for the Deaf, Lullabies to Paralyze, Rated R.
Sure.
It's just different. They're doing an excursion tour, but I think part of what hurts them on this album, too, at least in my opinion, is a bit of oversaturation with the guests. As I was reading through this, there's just so many people that come in and add bits here and there to this album. And it feels like it took away from the true Queens of the Stone Age, like, feel. This feels a bit more, like, sunken down into that trancey kind of druggy rock. But also industrial, you know, Trent Reznor, Nine Inch Nails, is a big influence on this album. And you can hear it blatantly on plenty of songs. There's other songs that strike me as very Shangri-La-Di-Da by Stone Temple Pilots. You know, we talked about it with STP. This just isn't going to be the kind of music I'm coming to this band for.
I agree with all that. But I will say there's a couple tracks on this album that have that vintage Queen sound and that I really, really, really love.
Yeah, I totally agree. There's plenty, and we'll get into it. Yeah.
Yeah, but go ahead.
I was just one other thing. I think regardless of all the things I just said about oversaturation with guests, I think Troy Van Leeuwen on guitar here, some of his finest work on some of these tracks. Absolute masterclasses.
Yeah, definitely. And I would say, because we broke this up into two episodes, I would say this is actually a great spot to break it up in, because I think the first four albums, and mainly Rated R, Songs for the Deaf, and Lullabies to Paralyze, like, those are, like, their prime. There's a lot I like from these next four albums, but as a whole, I like the first four a lot more than the second four.
We'll disagree on that to an extent. I think a more natural place to cut it might have been after this album, just given the six-year gap in between albums and a few different things going on.
Fair.
I hear your point. Anyways, yeah, it's still a good album, and we'll talk about it here. I just wasn't as impressed with this one as some of the previous works.
Yeah, and one thing I also wanted to say that I didn't say in the last episode, Queens is one of those bands, similar to Led Zeppelin or similar to Zach Bryan or even Hendrix to a little bit of extent, where every song, when I search for it and I find, like, the Reddit thread where it's like, would they talk about this song? You get 5 people going, this is my favorite Queen song of all time. This is the best song off the album, my favorite Queen song. Doesn't matter what song it is. It could be the first song, could be the last song, could be the instrumental. Someone is like, this is the best Queen song of all time.
That fucking rocks.
And it's very rare you get an artist like that. Like, there's only been a handful from us doing this podcast where you see that kind of response.
Yeah. No, it's unique, but it's a testament to their kind of wide array of different sounds, you know, and hard work over the years, so.
Yeah.
All right. With that, let me try to scroll over this fucking computer. Okay. Era Vulgaris. Let me start here. We talked about it a little bit on the last episode, but I feel remiss if I didn't bring it up again here. The album cover for this album is fucking awesome. It's not like a wild scene, but basically there's two cartoon light bulbs on it. They're both kind of, like, broken. So the one light bulb on the left is a green cartoon light bulb with a pirate hat and a peg leg through the side of it. The other light bulb is a yellow light bulb, and he's smoking a joint, and his eyes are all like strung out. And there's silly little details on that. In the top right corner, there's a little like black and white text box that says "You have mono." Across the album, if you imagine like the vinyl copy of this album, if you look closely at the album, you can see like the outline of a vinyl record as if the album had been like sitting in your basement for years and years, just like stacked under a bunch of things, and like it literally compressed the record into the cover. You can see that little outline around the outside. It's an awesome fucking album cover.
They've got really good album covers across the board. There's not one that I don't like, other than the self-titled, which is just, you know, the hot girl or whatever. Yeah. That's just basic rock.
Yeah, that's
101. But tropes. All the other album covers are really, really good.
Yeah. Totally agree. All right. Let's get into it then. First track, Turning on the Screw. They come out the gate ripping here. It's not that I absolutely love this song, but they bring the perfect amount of energy for the opener. These are the kinds of the tracks that, like, they get it. This belongs in the first slot here. It's hard to comp this one. It's got a bit of a strange alt-y sound to it, but Troy's riff here fucking rocks. It plays all the way through, and he kicks ass. This is going to be a theme. These two things in concert are going to be a theme throughout this album. Troy's kicking ass on guitar. Josh can't get off the fucking mat on the mic. This is some of his worst work on the mic. Actually, I think it's his worst album by far.
Yeah, and I noticed it a lot more on the, I would say, I think, like, Villains especially, and but a lot of the albums on the last four albums where it's like, man, like, sometimes the music's good, but the vocals just don't do enough.
It's interesting you bring up Villains. We'll talk about it a little more later, but I noticed it in Villains and in Times New Roman, I thought he actually was trying to, like, spice it up a little bit.
Yeah, he changed it up a little bit, but I don't know, like, for some reason it just, I think in Times New Roman it hit for me, but for Villains, I wasn't vibing with it.
Okay.
But yeah, Turning on the Screw, I really like the section at the end. The rest of the song is just all right. Genesis of the song is Josh is just singing about essentially firing at people who hold back in their art for fear of failure. So that's the point of the song.
Gotcha. That's cool. Alrighty. Next track, Sick, Sick, Sick. This is very Nine Inch Nails. This has Trent Reznor's fingers all over it. Heavy, low industrial sound, just super distorted, super heavy. It's a bit hard to, like, even make out any one instrument in particular. You know, again, Josh's voice doesn't really, like, leave that low range, low level sweet spot. It doesn't do anything for me.
Troy has a really nice riff after the first chorus that I really, really like. The rest of the song I could do with. It's very, very meh.
Yeah, that's how I felt about it.
Yeah. It does feature the Strokes frontman Julian Casablancas on backing vocals.
Oh,
and synth
cool.
Guitar.
That is one thing I did notice about this album is there's a few tracks with really, like, powerful backup vocals. Not in the sense that, like, they're loud and, like, energetic. Just they do a lot to boost the tone.
Yeah, definitely. The next track is I'm Designer, which has a really, really catchy chorus. So they got this awesome riff going on in the chorus and Josh doing, like, some sweeter singing. The rest of the song, it has, like, a weird riff and, like, just, I don't know, subpar vocals, in my opinion.
I got gifts or songs from the Vatican gift shop vibes on this one for some reason. Again, it's that pop turned grunge type feel. You know, it's dancey, but it's also heavy. I thought Troy was awesome on this one. You're right. He's got a sick riff. The solo rocks, too. The vocals, yes, they're a little bit sweeter, but still it's just not doing much for me. And another note, I just really feel like this one, you could almost just turn off his mic, and I would be about 90% as happy listening without him on the mic.
Yeah, and
as I am with.
Yeah, and he's singing about, like, the laziness of his generation, but, yeah, the vocal work's not great. After that is Into the Hollow, which I went back and forth on this song. There was a couple times I listened to it where I liked it, a couple times I listened to it where I didn't like it. So I don't know. What were your thoughts on this one?
Yeah, that's a good point, too. I feel like there's a lot of tracks on this album where In the Right Setting. It's a very In the Right Setting album.
Yeah.
Because it is different. You know, it's not, I would say it's not really in either of our day-to-day ranges. You know, find yourself in a more chilled out maybe situation, or I don't know, just it's just weird. But yeah, this one's very druggy, very trancey, sweet ballad. Whooshy drums mixing with this like high tune crying lead guitar and this thumping kind of rhythm strumming. Again, Troy's licking all over this one. It's really nice work for the simpler music. I feel the same way you do. Some days yes, some days no.
Yeah. And Josh lyrically inviting people to enter into his mental state, you know, the hollow with him. But yeah, just depends on what mood I'm in, whether or not I like this one.
Yeah.
After that is Misfit Love, which has an awesome intro. Music is great. The vocals, again, just kind of all right, but I really like the music on this one.
That's cool. This is that, like, again, like Songs from the Vatican Gift Shop. Up-tempo, kind of buzzy, distorted pop track or pop rock track. In a very unique, like, Queens of the Stone Age sound. Drums, they're quick and, like, stood out to me as very... I couldn't find a good comp for it, but, like, very R&B poppy. Troy... If it wasn't for the fact that guitars are tuned so buzzy and low, like, yes, this is a dancey, like, good vibe song that you might hear on, like, a pop radio station. Other than that, again, nothing from Josh. I like the music. I wasn't a huge fan of the song, though.
Yeah, and the genesis of this one is about someone who moves from, like, a small town to the big city and thinks that, you know, the city's never seen anything like them before. Like,
Vegas ain't ready for us.
You know the meme where, yeah, it's like, Vegas isn't ready for us, and it's like a picture of five white guys in Hawaiians. Everyone loses $300 in blackjack. It's like,
calls,
yeah, Vegas sees that literally every day.
Let's go smoke a fucking joint, brother.
That is like 10% of Vegas.
Oh, it's the best. yeah, that's all I got. Alrighty, next one, Battery Acid. This one feels like, there's a couple tracks on this album that struck me as very punk rocky. This is one of them. Old school punk rock. Fast, heavy, but also like very fun and danceable again. I got like, I'll mention this throughout the day today, but Josh, there are days, or there are songs where it's almost like he puts on a British accent or a British like cadence with it. And as if he's like cosplaying, I don't know, the lead singer of The Clash or something.
Huh. That's an interesting thought, because
there's plenty of songs on the next few albums that struck me that way, and I took notes on a few.
Yeah, let me know, like, your most prominent ones, because I do pick up on, like, there's songs where Josh's voice is definitely, like, different, but I never got, like, the British... I'll have to go back and listen to it with that in mind.
So, off the top of my head, again, I'll mention others throughout, but off the top of my head, the way you used to do strikes me as very British.
Okay.
Come and love me how,
oh,
like the
okay,
way
okay.
You used to do.
You know. Yeah, I got more of, like, a... when I was thinking about that, more of, like, an 80s, like, David Bowie type of vibe.
Which... is in a similar thing. We're not too far off there.
Yeah, just different references.
Right. Anyways, I do like this one. Troy rocks again on this one. Guitar work is fucking awesome. Absolutely one of his best on this album. Very cool track.
Yeah, and a great name for a rock song. Battery
Acid.
Yeah,
yeah. And it's not, like, that strikes you as it would be very heavy, very metal. It's not. You know, it's fun. It's still heavy, but it's not, like, metal-y. Battery Acid is, like... you know, doom and gloom, heavy Metallica bullshit, you know?
Yeah, or like Bring Me the Horizon, first two albums.
right. It's not that at all. It's a cool one on this album. Great name for a song.
Definitely. The next track on the album is one of my favorite Queen songs in general, Make It With Chew.
I don't know how this fits on this album, man. It's a cool song. I just, like, this feels like that. It feels like it came later in the development of this album, right? Because you have so many heavy, like, trancey tracks on this album. And then out of nowhere, you get this kind of, like, jazzy rock song.
Yeah, I think it fits in with the album just... I mean, I guess it not necessarily in that context, but, like, at this point in Josh's life, I think he was getting married to his wife,
ex-wife,
Brody. And it's funny, when this song came out, it was met with some pushback from Queens fans. It's like, God forbid this guy is going to get married, and he wants to write one love song five albums in. Like... music is supposed to be about what, you know, what you're feeling at this
do
point in
feel
your life.
Good hit too.
Yeah. So it's funny to me that people would be like, oh, I can't stand this song. It's like, dude, if he's getting married and he wants to write one love ballad, we're five albums in, like, who cares?
We explored that topic a little bit with Bring Me the Horizon. It's funny you brought them up. Where I just don't think Josh would even care. Like,
no.
I get the feeling he would be very much, if this isn't for you, then whatever. But fuck you, it's going on the radio.
Well, yeah, and today it is like one of their top songs in terms of streams. So I think more people like it than don't. But I was reading that when it came out, people were like, "Yeah, I did not like the song," or like, "Why would they waste a track doing something like this?"
Yeah, I could see that.
But I do love like the sweet singing in the chorus when he just
yeah. You get sweet singing. You get a lot of like bumping piano through this one, which is unusual for them. The vocal work still isn't that great. Even though it is a little bit sweeter, it still hasn't, like, given me the energy. I would expect this one to be a little bit fuller on the mic, you know, just from the chest a little bit. And it just still doesn't hit me that way. But this is one of the ones I noted that the background vocalists boost him phenomenally. And for that, at the very least, if not for him, I'll say the vocals are better on this song.
Well, I think the songwriting's better on this song. Just some of the verses I really like when he's singing. And I just can't recall what started it all or how to begin in the end. I ain't here to break it. Just see how far it will bend. And I think he has a couple lines like that that are just really nice.
I want to remember this track as we come later on to In Times New Roman and the track Emotion Sickness.
Yes.
It's an interesting 1-2 punch.
Yeah. Polar opposites.
Right.
Yeah.
Next one. This is the track that really was the genesis of today, and the last time we did this, Threes and Sevens, Guitar Hero 3 classic. I mean, how could you not love this song, man?
Dude, I don't know if he's using slide guitar or whatever he's using to produce that sound in the riff, like
all that.
Yeah, like whatever they're using to do that. It's amazing. I can't get enough of it.
And I even loved the little bit right after that where he's just wow wow wow. Dude, whatever Troy did here,
it's
all-timer.
I think it's my favorite Queens like riff or like
It's definitely in my top like three.
It's so unique, and every time you hear it, like you just can't help but like stop what you're doing and like I need to listen to this.
Fucking rocks. There's two solos on this song, and it's not a long song. It's only like 3 minutes flat, and I think they fit in two solos still. The energy on the mic is much picked up on this one. One of the few tracks where he gets off the mat a little bit and like actually shows some chops. Drums are like really complex, fun, different. Like there's so much good things to say about this song.
And you know what's funny about it? I didn't even pick up on it when listening to it for the first like 10 times. And I actually not until I started doing research. But Threes and Sevens, that's a shitty poker hand. And the song is about lies and like and people lying. And like Threes and Sevens is a poker hand that you might bluff with.
So, yeah, that was kind of what I had picked up. As I was trying to figure out what this was referencing, I was like, the only thing this could be is poker. I didn't put two and two together there with the song, but it's sevens and threes. It's not threes and sevens.
Did I really write that wrong?
No. You wrote it right, but you would never say, oh, I have threes and sevens.
Oh, well, whatever. It upside down. Threes and sevens spells lies, too, which is...
Wait. What?
Oh, actually, no, that would be with... If you put the seven first, because the seven upside down would be the L, and then the three being the E, but...
Oh, yeah, but where's the I?
Well, you just have to use your imagination for the I.
I see. Imaginary.
But no, I mean, and he sings, you know, lie to my face, tell me it ain't nothing, that's what I want to hear. So the song is definitely about lies. One more cool fun fact on this one. They performed this song during Pop World in 2007, but instead of using instruments, Josh was singing on the mic, and the rest of the band is just playing, like, on laptops. Like, they all have laptops, and they're just hitting different keys on the keyboard, and it was, you know, supposed to be like about the rise of technology and music.
That's where music nowadays is going, brother. All these kids with their fucking iMacs.
But just the visual of Troy and the guys, just they're sitting there and they all got like sunglasses on and they're all just hitting the keys on the laptop. It was hilarious.
These kids nowadays are going to go to concerts one day in about 5 years and they're all just going to have headsets on. Fucking never mind.
I mean, you ever been to a David Guetta concert or?
No. Anyways. Yeah, great song. Absolute must listen off these guys.
One of my favorites.
Next one, not so much.
Oh, I like this one.
I like it. Suture Up Your Future. Slower, trancey track, and Josh is sunk back down into the bowels. Bluesy guitar, thumpy bass, kind of carrying the beat here. Troy clapping over, not clapping, chopping over the verses and then filling it out kind of through the chorus. Kind of clappy, clicky drums. Yeah.
Yeah, I like the metaphor of just, you know, move forward, don't look back, don't give a F about what's behind you in life. And he has a line in here where he sings, "Got caught in the plaid of all this talking at once," which is a reference to Tangled Up in Plaid, I believe from Lullabies to Paralyze.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Another little callback there in the lyrics.
That's cool.
They sprinkle them in every now and then.
Yeah, you get one every once in a while. Yeah, another one, situational. Maybe, maybe not.
For sure.
Next one, River in the Road. I don't have anything for this one, really, dude. It's up-tempo music. Drums are kind of thrashing, and I don't know. The vocals are just so lackluster, man.
Well, they got Mark Lanegan on the mic for this one. And, yeah, it's got the song has got, like, this impending sense of doom, but this is one of my least favorites on the album.
Yeah, an absolute nothing burger. Probably the worst on the album, if we're being honest.
Yeah. And then the next one, which actually this is the last one, Run, Pig, Run.
Is this the last one, or is there one more, technically? Anyways.
Technically.
Yeah. I kind of feel the same way about this one as I felt about the last one. It's a little bit better, you know? They're trying a little, like, there's a little bit more energy on every piece. But I can't get over it. The drums did stick out to me here. Drums are really nice. It feels like they get to spread their wings a little bit, do all sorts of different stuff. It's fun. Josh is just hurting this song again.
Yeah, the guitar feels like frantic, manic. And the guitar wasn't bad, but yeah, the vocals are kind of drowned out, and it just, I don't know. This is another one where, this is one of the ones where I was surprised to go to the Reddit thread, and people were like, yeah, I love this song. They're mixing up all these different instruments, and I was like, oh, this just doesn't do it for me.
I want some of those drugs. Oh, man.
Yeah.
All right. Last track, technically, kind of, sort of, Running Joke. It's this very simple, like, haunting ballad-y thing. It starts out almost like, reminds me of This Lullaby a little bit in the very beginning, where Josh is just speaking like solid, or like boldly, or like firmly, but also in this haunting kind of like dark tone. You know, it all picks up after a little bit and mucks it up some. You get these jangly like guitars and, you know, soft inviting vocals after a little bit. I just think it's a terrible close for the album.
Yeah, I do too. And really, Make It With You in Threes and Sevens, like, those two songs are both in my top 10 list. I love both those songs. If those two songs weren't on this album, I would never come back to this album.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. I think Never is harsh. You know, like we said, there are other tracks on here that there's some good stuff and there's some bad stuff, but yeah, it's tough.
Yeah, definitely.
But it's an interesting point, and maybe this is why it would have been better to do this album last week. I had mentioned that during the previous album was some of their lowest points, and maybe that had just carried over into this album, you know?
I think so, because I really, really enjoyed Lullabies Paralyzed.
Right, right. It's crazy that if that was their lowest point, they had such a good album with that, and this is just so meh.
Yeah.
They
take a bit of a hiatus until Like Clockwork comes out in 2013.
So some crazy shit happens in between. 6 years off. Shortly after, so 2008, July 2nd, 2008, their former keyboardist, Natasha Schneider, dies of lung cancer at 52. Mm. Beats up the band pretty good. Everybody's kind of in tough shape. They do a kind of remembrance show at the Henry Fonda in Los Angeles, featuring artists such as Schneider's husband, Elaine Johannes, who works with Queens, Kyle Gass, Matt Cameron of Soundgarden, Brody Dale, Jesse Hughes, PJ Harvey, and Jack Black.
Mm.
I touched on that a little bit. There was going to be another comedian reference coming up. So they do this show, and it describes it as playing a kind of variety of different songs, some Queens songs, but also songs from The Doors, Cream, Tenacious D, and a bunch of other bands, just covers and stuff. It's cool. It's a cool show. At a similar time, so 2010, I think in 2010, Josh fucks up his knee, goes in for knee surgery. Something crazy happens in the surgery where he almost dies. I think it has to do with the anesthesia or something. Where yeah. He had like a odd heart arrhythmia or
something. He went into a coma.
Yeah, and so he's in this coma for a little while. He comes out of this surgery like alive and relatively okay, but really fucked up mentally, like super depressed for a little while, struggling with it. It's a tough spot for him. So those two instances are all to say the 6-year hiatus wasn't them, you know, going off into the sunset somewhere.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, I can only imagine when you go through something like that. Like, I think I read a quote where he was like, yeah, I don't even know if I wanted to make music anymore.
Right. It's a tough time. But I think one of the what I bitched about on the last album with the jammy aspects of it maybe was something that was a catalyst for reigniting his love for music, that you have so many people around you that are in such support of your art, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting. About the same time, I think right before they got back into the studio for Like Clockwork, or maybe it was after, it's somewhere around here, Josh kind of splits off for a little bit. Not splits off, but does a side project called Them Crooked Vultures.
Yeah, I saw that.
Featuring Dave Grohl on drums and John Paul Jones of Led Zeppelin on bass.
All-time trio.
All-time trio. Bad album.
They should have let Dave Grohl do more of the lead vocals.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know what Josh's like talent is like on guitar, but if Josh could play guitar and John Paul Jones could just be John Paul Jones, like, I guess bring in a drummer and figure the rest out.
There were some good tracks. I just think, you know what would have been cool is if they did, like, where Josh does a verse and then Dave does a verse, like, the back and forth.
Yeah.
And then, like, one of them does a chorus.
Totally agree.
Because you don't see that as often in rock, and especially not when you have, like, superpowers like that in one group.
Or if you do see it, a lot of times it's a back and forth, like, male-female type
thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think for having that kind of a trio, it was an underwhelming project.
Yeah. Like, I listened to maybe the 3 or 4 top songs off the album. Same. And was wildly disappointed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It wasn't bad. It just wasn't.
It wasn't.
When you hear those names, you're like, oh, boy.
Yeah. I was preparing for a treat, and I got, like a bonbon.
Yeah. So, Like Clockwork comes out in 2013, and Dave Grohl actually plays drums on a couple songs on this album.
Yeah, their drummer, he had started doing the studio work for this album, then I don't know if he left or was kicked out or whatever. It sounded like he just left. They bring in Dave Grohl to do a lot of the drum work on this album again.
Yeah, he does it for My God is the Sun, If I Had a Tail, Fairweather Friends, and I Appear Missing, and there might be one more track too, but those are the four main ones.
Yeah, and it's cool because I think at the same time Dave Grohl and Foo Fighters are doing that Sonic Highways thing, and I think Queens of the Stone Age might have popped in, some of the guys might have popped in and done a bit for the show for that release. But anyways, so yeah, Dave and Josh are hanging out a lot at this point, which is cool, especially given the fact coming off that coma and everything. Like, it's good to have like a Dave fucking Grohl being like, hey man, come on, let's go do this.
Yeah, remind me when we get to Emotional Sickness. I got a quick tidbit on Dave Grohl that I didn't note down, but I'll say it.
Okay. With that, I think this is a much, much better album than the last one. It's not to say that it's at the level of their highest work, but some much, much more enjoyable stuff here. And a little bit like,
it's a different sound.
Yeah, they've changed it up. It's not so industrial, heavy, grungy type stuff anymore. There is that heavy aspect to it, but they're mixing in a lot more kind of outside of rock sounds, let's say. Just different stuff. Some of it's good, some of it's bad, but it's certainly better than the last one.
100%.
So, with that, let's get into it. First track, Keep Your Eyes Peeled. And this is just, this feels like bread and butter to me a little bit, but that's kind of what I want for the opener anyways. Slow, heavy blues track. Thick as fuck bass line here, simple, slow drums, energetic, kind of dangerous, buzzy vocals. It's not crazy, but I just like the sound.
Yeah, it's interesting, too, because the music never really progresses, but it almost feels like it's intentional in a way.
Yeah, which is interesting.
And I like the songwriting a lot on this. He sings, "Fallen leaves realize they are no friend of autumn. The view from hell is blue sky, so ominously blue. Daydream until all the blue is gone." And he sings in the chorus like over and over, "If life is but a dream, wake me."
Right.
And I don't know. It feels very unique. And this is another one of those ones, depending on the mood I'm in, like there's times when I really like it and there's times where it's just all right.
Agreed. Nothing else there. Next one. "I sat by the ocean." Again, grounded in blues here, but this is mixing in like some California rock, some pop elements, some sweetness on the mic. Fairly simple, not super heavy, but still grounded in hard rock. Hollow lead guitar licking kind of all over the chorus. Vocals build up, give it some character here. A lot of like different sounds on the mic, let's say, different stuff, which is a nice change of pace. Great change of pace. Like, even if it's not awesome vocals, like, at least he's trying different shit.
Yeah, and this was the hit off the album, and I do think the riff in this is really catchy, and again, the songwriting's pretty good. It's a great breakup song. "I sat by the ocean and drank a potion, baby, to erase you." Like, those two lines are, you know, it's relatable, and it's, I like the wordplay there. And yeah, this is definitely one of my favorites off the album.
Yeah, I think me too. I think so, yeah. All right, next one. "The Vampire of Time and Memory." Vampire is spelled as in, like, the pyre part, like a funeral pyre. Just an interesting note there. Mm-hmm. Simpler, quiet piano track, kind of. Vocals are firm but sad, and then after a little bit, drums kind of add some bumpiness, and guitars pop in a little, like, quiet licks, adding some depth. It's a nice ballad. It's something they don't have a lot of at this point.
Yeah, definitely. And when Josh first wrote this song, his ex-wife at the time, he said to his ex-wife at the time, he's like, "Does anyone ever get this right? Like, I feel no love, and who even wants to hear a song like this?" And his ex-wife at the time was like, "Who cares? Like, this is what you're going through. You make music, you know, based on what you're going through. You make it for yourself. Like, who cares?" And then Josh was like, "You know what? You're right." And that's kind of why they brought this to the album.
Yeah.
And I like it for, it's definitely like a dark, kind of sad
sure.
song, but it's nice to have something different.
Yeah, yeah. It's not something that would fall into my usual spectrum, but get like just progressing linearly through their albums, this is a nice bit. Anyways.
Yeah.
The next one is a bit jokey. It's back to their old ways. "If I Had a Tail." What did strike me at this point in the album is it feels like the song structures are a bit more traditional than their usual stuff, too. Instead of that more jammy kind of trancey sound, you get more traditional rock structures on the songs. You know, chorus or
first chorus,
da-da-da. Simple, classic rock-sounding track. I didn't find it super unique in any way, but it's just an enjoyable listen and a fine deep cut.
Yeah, this is one of the ones I like from the album. They got, like I said, Dave Grohl on the drums. They also have Arctic Monkeys' Alex Turner helping out with some of like the ooh-la-las in the chorus. And they even had Mark Lanegan and former Queens member Nick Oliveri on this track on various instruments
nice.
And background vocals. So it's like a whole, the gang's all here.
How do you think those recording sessions go? They just have like a group text with like 20 people like, "Hey, who's free today?"
That's a great question. Like,
like they certainly don't get all these people in the studio like every fucking day to record this album.
Well, I think for some of these albums, like they must have lived in this where Dave Grohl lived too, because Dave,
right.
like I read a couple times, like Dave Grohl just pops in the studio when he knows they're recording, like every now and then.
"Fellas, what's going on, man?"
Yeah, pretty much. And yeah, some of the other guys, I don't know. Like it is interesting that when you have so many guys that pop in and out, it's like. Like you said, they really text the group chat with 15 people and say, "Hey, who wants to come help out on the song?"
Yeah, we could really use track 17 today.
Or is it just like everyone knows their recording schedule, and when they feel like it, they're like, "Oh, you know what? I'm not doing anything today. Like, I'll just go see what the Queens of the Stone Age are working on."
Maybe it's like this, where like the core members kind of like build the track, and then they just pop these guys in when they're free. You know what I'm saying? So like, it's Josh, Troy, and whoever's like the core at this time. And then on the day that Nick and Arctic Monkeys are free, "Hey, come in, we'll finish this up." You know?
Yeah.
Something like that. But it's interesting.
But But yeah, no, I like the song and the metaphor of, you know, stating like if I was as free as an animal, if I had a tail, like things would be different just because the world's so materialistic and everyone just, you know, succumbs to the rich and powerful in society. And there's a deeper meaning behind it. And I do like the song.
It is interesting that you make that point there, but I kind of feel this about the next three this album and the next two. You feel a bit more of that depressed kind of sad, not sad, it's not a good way of putting it, but maybe dejected lyrics coming through on these next three albums a little bit more than you used to. Whereas I feel like the songs that weren't so happy on the previous albums were more angry than they were dejected.
Yeah, that you definitely pick up on that shift in the lyrics.
Yeah, yeah. It's just a difference. But they're at a different point in their careers, so.
Yeah.
All right, next one. My God is the Sun. This feels very up-tempo 2000s hard rock. Bass, guitars churning along quickly. Josh vocals kind of reaching up into the higher register here. It's a nice sound on the mic. He's doing great work again. Finally again. Didn't find anything too crazy with the drums. Fairly simple, just setting a pace for the vocals, you know. This song does close with a bang, man. It feels like the whole band gets up together and just rips at it for like the last 20, 30 seconds. Good track.
Yeah, ending was cool. Song is decent. Sun, S-U-N, or Sun, S-O-N. Mm-hmm. Premise of the song is the sun is everything. Josh has a young son at this point in his life. But right. Yeah, good track.
I'm going to probably butcher this next one. Calopsia?
I would have said Calopsia, so one of us is right. I don't know. This is another one where Nine Inch Nails' Trent Reznor is on the backing vocals. And I don't really like this one.
Yeah, it's an interesting ballad. It's weird. Again, you feel that Nine Inch Nails influence on this one. It's got buzzy, thick guitar chords, thumpy bass, kind of slow, chugging piano, and a borderline jazzy track, like jazzy sound at times. It's a ballad, kind of, but it's also got, like, it's not a traditional ballad. You just hear so many odd sounds, but it's the way he's singing and I guess the, you know, that bit of piano that gives it that ballad quality. But yeah, there's good parts and bad parts about this song. This is one of those day-to-day tracks for me.
Yeah, and he wrote it for his daughters. It's Calopsia is defined as when people think what they're seeing is more beautiful than it actually is. So, I don't know. It's whatever. I'm not a big fan of this one.
Gotcha. Next one, Fairweather Friends.
Did you pick up on who's on the course with Josh on this one?
No.
It's none other than Sir Elton John.
Oh, yeah, baby. Elton John's another one that is he's a sucker for jumping in on the strangest tracks.
It's kind of cool. You can tell he's just a lover of music.
Yeah, he's a whatever that word is with the Greek file at the end.
I mean, from doing tracks with big pop stars to doing a track with Eminem to doing tracks with Queens of the Stone Age, like you can tell he just loves music.
The Struts, he's worked with the Struts. Like this bloke just fucking loves being in the studio,
and that's cool.
It's so cool. You know, just a very solid rock track here. There's a couple tracks on this album that sound very Foo Fighters to me, and this is one of them. You know, the lead guitar on this track is tuned up, bright. I love what Troy's doing here. Piano pounding underneath, adding some poppiness, some fun, danceability, energetic vocals. It's a cool track, cool deep cut.
Yeah, I like this one. And it's about how after Josh's surgery, like, you know, he just kind of figured out who his real friends were and who the fake friends were. I will say, if you're getting Elton John to come on the track, just have him sing like the chorus or find something for him to sing solo. Don't have him do the backing vocals where you can't even tell it's him if you don't really listen or look it up on Genius.
It would be kind of wild if Josh was like, you know what? You know what, Elton? You just do this one.
Or at least like the chorus.
And give him a fucking feature too. That's Sir Elton John to you.
Yeah, it is. That's the other part of it too.
Give him a feature. Come on. Let the lads have some fun. All right. But yeah, cool track here for sure. Next one, Smooth Sailing. Again, this gives me slightly Nine Inch Nails vibes. Buzzy, distorted blues sound. Vocals have this like tinge of anger and darkness on it. Guitars kind of thump along menacingly. A lot of claps mix in with the drums. Got a good, like, headbanging vibe for live music. Really, really good solo on this one. Check that out for sure. Another really, really nice deep cut.
Yeah, another decent track. Love the solo at the end. Song's just about being on top of the mountain, making it through the worst parts of life. Another good one. After that is I Appear Missing, which is a dark, dark song about, you know, they're being hopeless. And I really think some of Josh's best work lyric-wise.
Lyrically and on the mic. I mean, lyrically, yes. The mic, I would say his vocal work a little bit less than his writing here, but still really nice work on the mic. I mean, it's a, yes, very sad, very, I don't know, like broken kind of. You just hear it between it's the lead guitar and the vocals that give it that, like, crushing sound. Drums are doing a lot here, too. It's certainly worth, like, tuning into the drums here because they're doing a lot of cool different stuff here. Up-tempo churning guitars, vocals really, like, reaching up and down in a range. It's a very slept-on deep cut.
Yeah, and just some haunting lyrics. Pieces were stolen from me, or dare I say, given away. Watching the water give in as I go down the drain. I appear missing now. I go missing, no longer exist. One day I hope I'm someone you'd miss.
It's a bit of that, like, who would show up to my funeral type deal. Yeah. Which you kind of, like, it's crazy because the whole bit about that is, like, you'll never get to know unless there's some, you know, thing we don't know about when people die. But you do get a sense of that when you go into a coma where it's like, oh, I'm alive, fuckers. Who showed up?
Yeah.
I got the registry right here.
I got the hospital records.
Yeah. It's an interesting, I guess I never thought about it like that. That's crazy. But yeah, interesting point here.
Yeah.
Really cool track. And then they close it out with the title track, Like Clockwork. Slow, kind of classic sounding piano ballad, simple notes with super sweet, sad vocals. I think this is a perfect spot on the album for this song. It's a perfect, like, again, like they're adding more ballads in at this point, especially on this album. And whether or not, like, it, like, if this song had appeared on, I don't know, Lullabies, I'd probably be like, oh, fuck, whatever. But the fact that we've had to wait 6 albums to get these, I'm enjoying them. It's a good, I like it.
Yeah, definitely. And like you said, it's perfect placement in context of the album. And this is a rather depressing song about, he's singing about different regrets in life and just coming to terms with the idea that people will really just do whatever they want and you can't stop someone from doing what they're going to do.
Right. It's a bit of a, you've talked about his nihilistic view on life and it's a bit of that acceptance of, like, it is what it is. I can only control what I am in control of, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, all in all, like, it's a very different album. Maybe their most, like, different sound that they put out. So at
unique
least,
relative to their other work.
At least thus far. And I think it works. I mean, I like it a lot better than Era of Vulgaris.
Yeah, it's a cool comeback. And it's a cool album cover, too. Not quite as cool as Era Vulgaris, but still, you got this woman, like, in a dark cloak with this skeletal body,
so,
like, hugging her.
Like a vampire.
Yeah, like a vampire, exactly. It's a cool album cover.
The next album cover is really cool, too.
Yeah, this is wild. So this is Villains, 2017.
Yes.
Yeah, I love this album cover, too. So this one, you've got the guy standing, a very, like, typical white dude. Just
It looks like Josh.
Yeah, actually, that's a great point. I'd never thought about that, but it does look like Josh. And you see these, like, devil hands that have crept over the eyes. And on the back of the palms, you see two eyeballs that, like, peek, as if, like, the devil is working through the person that he's, like, covering up their eyes. It's a wild album cover. And I love, I don't know if Spotify does this, but on Apple, like, sometimes bigger artists will animate the artwork on the cover. So, like, on this one, you see, like, the eyes blinking and kind of, like, wryly smiling a little bit.
Yeah. No, it's a dope album cover.
For sure. And it's,
which,
yeah, so you said you weren't a huge, huge fan of this album.
I don't know what it is. I just can't get into the sound. Like, the sound of the album just doesn't do it for me in any way, shape, or form. Mm. The first time I listened to it, I didn't like it. I went back, listened to it, like, a couple more times. I was like, maybe it's just me. Maybe I'm not in a good mood. Separate days. I probably gave it 4 listens all the way through. I'm just not a fan of this album. Which is, I know I'm in the minority because I know this album did really well with critics and really well with, you know, just fans.
I do like this album. It's certainly a break from their super heavy stuff. There's not much heavy work here. And it feels a bit more fun. It, just generally fun. It feels like they were trying to get away from where like Clockwork was a deliberately like heavy, hard-hitting album. This one feels like, all right, like we're back. We're doing a classic Queens album, boys. Let's go. Whether or not you take it that way is kind of up to the listener, but that's how I felt listening to this album.
Gotcha.
There's a few tracks on this that struck me as British, so let's get into it. First song, Feet Don't Fail Me. I do kind of get what you're saying on this track. I do like this track a lot, but it takes about, what is it, $1.30 to get into it?
It's a crazy long build-up.
It's a crazy build-up, and it's just kind of like screechy, like ripping guitar with pounding kick drums over it. And that takes the first minute 30, give or take. And then, like, it doesn't proceed that way. It pretty much breaks off entirely from the open and it kicks out this funky hard rock track.
Yeah, there's definitely, and they said on this album, there's a lot of tracks where it has, like, you can, like, dance along to it or groove along to it, that kind of a vibe.
This is a dancer, for sure.
Yeah.
You know, you got pumping guitar chords and, like, these fun, bumpy vocals, you know, thick bass. Again, drums, like, do a great job of leading the vibe, leading the verses. I think it's a great open, except for that minute 30-odd intro.
Yeah, fun fact on the lyrics. The lyrics are mostly Josh's, but the song title, Feet Don't Fail Me, actually came from Iggy Pop. I guess they were working on some stuff together, and Iggy Pop almost used, like, the Feet Don't Fail Me as, like, one of his songs on one of his albums and ended up deciding not to, and Queens took it.
Maybe that's something we need to get into on our next grab bag or sampling platter, because I don't know a single Iggy Pop song, but I keep hearing his name.
I've got two or three saved. I don't know if a grab bag would do it justice, because he's one of those guys that has so many different, like,
gotcha.
Styles.
Maybe we need to...
Of, like, some of it's, like, traditional stuff, and then some of it's, like, him, like, just being crazy, you know?
Maybe we need to figure out something else for Iggy Pop at some point. Because I'm interested. I keep hearing his name, but I'm like, I can't attribute one song to Iggy Pop.
A character. All-time character.
Alrighty. Next one, the hit off the album, the single, the radio single, The Way You Used to Do. This is so fun, man. I can't help but, like, it brings me back to Threes and Sevens a little bit, though, just the way the guitar is going. It's that buzzy, kind of, like, almost plucky, but, like, plucky in a chords way. It's just so fun. Buzzy, obfuscated guitars, bumpy, fun vocals. Again, very much a dancey thing. Clicky, poppy drums. Josh getting up and down in his levels in a fun way. And it's, again, that British sound on the mic. Even the cadence is British. just the way he's, like, the speed and, like, the timing at which he sings some of these lyrics, it sounds very, like, 70s. Punk rock to me.
You know what's funny? He told Zane Lowe in an interview that this song was inspired by, like, old swing music, like Dean Martin.
So, okay. Well, that's not exactly what I was getting at, but yeah.
Well, yeah.
It's not at all what I was getting at, but that is cool.
Yeah, it's still a fun fact.
I could, now that you mention it that way, though, I can hear that. It's a bit of, you know, it's a bit of that, I'm trying to think of a good Dean Martin comp here, like, not Volare. Anyways, if something comes to me, I'll say it, but I do hear Dean Martin in that chorus now that you mention it.
Yeah. And lyrically, this is just a love song for his wife. You know, he's singing back to when he first met her, was when he was 17 and or when she was 17 and he was touring with the Screaming Trees at Lollapalooza in 1996. So,
nice.
Yeah.
It's cool.
And yeah, I'm not going to say this for each song, but this style of the album is just not for me. So I'm not going to say it over and over again.
All right. Noted. Next one, Domesticated Animals. Lower tune pop rock track. Simple musically, kind of fun, bumpy again. I'm probably going to say that on every track, too. But it's got this, like, repeated rise cadence where the tone will rise and rise and then drop. Rise, rise, drop, rise. You know, that's like line by line kind of cadence there. Gave me a little bit of, like, Purple Haze, Jimi Hendrix kind of feel in that way. Purple Haze.
Yeah.
Dun, dun, dun. Clever guitar licks throughout. Troy's doing great work again here. I'm going to originally I had Just Another Track, but as I'm thinking about it now, maybe I'm just in a better mood today. But I don't know. I kind of like it.
Yeah, I didn't really care for it. Definitely a creative song. Lyrically, talking about groupthink. But yeah, that's pretty much all I have. I do like the next song though, Fortress.
Fortress. Got some like old school prog rock feel here. Mid tempo, chunky guitars with tuned up clean lead guitar, thumpy buzzy bass. Softer, sweet vocals, and again, it stuck out to me about the range that this band has, like in comparison to some of their earlier stuff. It felt like they were a bit of in a box previously. These last two, three albums really show that they could do more than just that, you know, heavy, churny, kind of grungy stuff.
It feels like after Josh went through everything with his coma, he kind of woke up and was like, you know what? I'm just going to make music based on how I feel and what's going on in my life, and I'm not going to worry about what anyone thinks.
Did it open his third eye?
I think it did.
That's crazy.
And this song he wrote for his kids, you know, I really like the lines. I don't want you to fail, so I tell you the awful truth. Everyone faces darkness on their own. As I have done, so will you.
Yeah.
So it's just a cool ballad that he wrote for his kids.
Yep. Like it. Next one, Head Like a Haunted House. Bit punk rocky with this one. It has a very like low, quick, ripping guitar and quick, echoey vocals. Up-tempo, crashy drums. Like almost like a Green Day-esque, kind of. But a bit more structured than a typical punk rock song. We bitched about this when we talked about Blink-182 a long time ago, where like some of the early stuff felt to me very unserious, not like well-structured. This is much more structured than that, which is my typical criticism of a punk rock sound. But this is the best of that sound, and a cool deep cut.
Yeah, two things. One, this song definitely has like, there's all kind of weird noises and little licks and like Scooby-Doo type shit.
Yeah.
Like, you know the Scooby-Doo cuts where they're running through, like there's like 18 doors and they run through this one and then the villain does and then they
keep crossing. It's that sound where like you're running but you're not moving.
Yeah, there's just, I don't know. The song to me, it feels like there's all types of like weird stuff like that going on.
Yeah, they just threw in goofball shit. They're having fun in the studio.
Yeah, and then the second thing I was going to say, because you brought up like the pop punk or punk rock kind of sound, it would be cool if they did an album that was like, like had its foundation in like pop punk or punk rock. Like,
I was thinking about this today, and we'll talk about it some more on the Taylor Swift episode we're going to do right after this. Listen to Taylor Swift. I wish there was an artist, like a big prominent artist, and I guess Dave Grohl's done this to an extent with he did that metal album and then he did the Bee Gees covers. I wish more artists that after like six or seven albums were just like, you know what, we're going to try something completely different on this one. Not everybody's going to love it, and certainly the core fans are going to be like, hey, what the fuck are we doing? But it would be fun to hear, like the Taylor Swift example is like Taylor Swift goes pop punk.
100%. And that's what, like, Machine Gun Kelly did it, and Tickets to My Downfall is an amazing album.
All right, I take it easy.
Dude, it is. Start to finish, that album kicks ass. Produced by Travis Barker. I love it. Like, I don't know. I like that album more than some of his rap albums.
I thought Eminem killed him like 6 years ago.
Nah. Don't be a hater. He's got some good stuff. You probably haven't even listened to it.
No, I don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
He just looks like a douchebag. I don't know.
Yeah, he looks like a douchebag, but music kicks ass.
Anyways, yeah, you're right. It would be so cool. Like, at this point, it feels like Josh has that inkling of like, let's just have some fun. Or not, that's a bad way of putting it. I guess a better way of putting it is like, let's try some different stuff. But it would be cool to see them dive into a whole project, even if it's only like six songs of a pop punk or maybe like a jazz rock type deal. I don't know.
Yeah, just put out an EP.
Just an EP, something cool, something different, you know.
Agreed.
Next one, I think it's Unreborn Again. Is that where we are?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This is a very like slower, druggy blues track. Keyboard adds some like buzzy synth licks over heavy guitars, simple poppy drums. Another one where I felt like Josh is doing his British accent on the mic. It's everything I said before about that sound. It struck me.
Yeah, this is one of the few songs I saved, but I might unsave it. I still don't know if I'd like it. It's like a 7-minute song. He's singing about like remaining forever young and talking about stereotypes that come along with that. But it was a good track.
Yeah. Oh, that reminds me. I totally forgot another story that I wanted to plug in. Let me drop it now. Sidetrack. So in 2014 or 2015, Queens of Stone Age goes and does this festival, which is kind of produced by Jay-Z. And I forget what it's called. I'll try to pull it up here while I'm talking. But so they go and do this festival, and as soon as they get to the festival, they go to the back, and Jay-Z has, like, how did I put this? Oh, let me just read exactly what Josh said about this Jay-Z interaction. He had his security frisking the bands on the way in. I just told them, if you open up my bag, I'm not playing. So I guess it's up to you whether we're playing or not. The idea they frisked all my guys means you're in some different place. No one has ever done that to me. Another note. He also gave us some champagne and wanted to take a photo with it. And I thought, that's not a gift. This is a marketing tool. So I destroyed it because I thought it was rude overall. And you shouldn't frisk my guys. You should fuck off.
He destroyed the champagne?
He took the glass of champagne and shattered it. With Jay-Z standing by him.
That's a wild move.
I think he just got the impression that, like, Jay-Z wasn't genuinely interested in them, and this was...
Oh, like one of those...
It was a bit of a money grab instead of some genuine, like, expression of art.
Right, right.
And he was just offended by the whole thing in general, and by this point, he was like, you know what? Fuck you.
Also, they probably had drugs in the bags. I mean...
but, okay... In parallel with that, would Jay-Z care?
Good point. No. All right, he shouldn't.
He shouldn't?
Yeah.
Who would he be like, hey, you can't bring that in here, bud. That would be wild, huh?
Fair, fair.
Jay-Z turns Dared Lion.
Good point.
Anyways, I think that happened between the Like Clockwork and Villains album, so maybe this is a okay, not horrible time to bring that up, but yeah, just a funny story there.
I like it. The next track on Villains is Hideaway. Didn't really care for this one.
Yeah, it's just kind of easy breezy listening, in my opinion. Kind of a trippy, poppy track. High tuned lead guitar over strummy bass and these space quest vibe keyboard licks. Lower vocals overall, simple drums. Nothing crazy, but I wouldn't like turn it off if it just kind of popped on.
Yeah. The track after that, another all time. Track name, The Evil Has Landed.
You know what's crazy? This is so fucking crazy. We talked about it a little bit on the last album. I got Black Dog Led Zeppelin from this track.
Okay.
It's the guitar cadence mixed with the stopping and the singing and, you know, just really, like, clean, soloed out, like, guitar licks. And even the drums struck me as very John Bonham in a way. Like, I got and The Evil Has Landed would be a classic Zeppelin title, too. It would not shock me at all to have this on, like, Physical Graffiti.
Sure.
I love this one. Quick lines in the chorus. It's that quick lines in the chorus separated by pauses, where you get a little bit of the guitar or whatever. Fun track. I love this one.
You know what's crazy about this one is the main riff for the song, had existed for, like 15 years beforehand, where there was just never found, like, a track for it.
Hey, brother, every riff has existed. No ideas are original.
Right, but to have something like a riff that you like for 15 years.
I know what you're saying. I'm just
it.
Giving
yeah.
you shit.
No,
yeah,
I know,
yeah.
I know.
Yeah, it's interesting. That's cool.
Oh, and the song was written actually in 2014, too.
Oh, so they've had this. They've been sitting on this one since Like Clockwork. Okay,
yeah.
Cool. Gotcha. Yeah. All righty. Last one. Closing out the album, Villains of Circumstance. And again, it feels like they're... Now I'll just say it, like, every last song on every album feels very purposeful.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you'll see bands with a kind of inkling to let that last song slip away, especially in a more digital era of music. You know, this is, what, 2017? So it would be quite easy to just say, who fucking cares? They're not going to listen all the way through anyways. But again, very intentional. Low, haunting blues. Tumbling kind of low plucky guitars with beaten vocals. The whole sound kind of like picks up into more of a full, still beaten sad thing later. Then it really kind of closes with a bang at the end, like a nice crescendo. I think it's a cool way to close the album.
Yeah, this is the second album in a row where Villains of Circumstances, obviously Villains, the name of the album. The last track on the last album was Like Clockwork, the name of that album. Villains of Circumstance is about a long-distance relationship. It's a love song, and I like the line he sings in the song, we're hostages of geography, which is a cool line.
Huh. That's a fun little metaphor there. I like
that. But yeah, this is another one, one of the few that I saved off this album. I like this one.
Yeah, shorter album for sure relative to the other stuff, but definitely some songs to take away here. No knocks. Last album we got so far in Times New Roman. This was last year, 2023, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what happened in the 6 years that it took to put this album out, but I guess COVID.
yeah, like 2017, though, there's a good 3-4 years before COVID.
yeah, that's a good point. I don't know. But thank God this is not a COVID album. This is very personal to Josh.
Oh, dude, speaking of which, do you know Paramore, This Is Why won the Grammy for Best Rock Album last year?
I know.
Did you see the other nominees were In Times New Roman, the Foo Fighters album, and then there was another one that was really good, too. But
Was it Blink?
No, because that came out.
Oh, too late.
Too late, yeah. It was another really good one, though. I'll just pull it up while you can talk.
Yeah, I haven't respected the Grammys for a long time. I've probably said this before, but I remember 1 year Lana Del Rey won Best Rock Album of the Year, and that just cannot be possible. Furthermore, I think there's a growing sentiment, maybe not even growing, a solid sentiment around the music industry that the Grammys are kind of bullshit and really just a circle jerk for music executives. So I don't put any stock into that. I think sometimes it feels like the Grammys, too, give out awards as more of a career accomplishment deal than a true, like, recognition of this single art. And I feel like maybe Paramore got a bit of that.
Yeah, I'm glad I pulled this up because this is going to piss you off too. So the nominees for Best Rock Album were But Here We Are, Foo Fighters.
Yep.
Good album. Better than This Is Why.
Yep.
In Times New Roman, Queens of the Stone Age. Better than This Is Why. 72 Seasons, Metallica. I'm not a Metallica fan. I didn't listen to it.
Good, not great. Yeah.
Okay. And then the last one, Starcatcher, Greta Van Fleet. Much better than This Is Why. I actually think of all these, Starcatcher is probably the best album.
Wow, I didn't expect that out of you. That's cool.
But Here We Are is good, but it's just not as memorable as any like of the other Foo Fighter albums to me.
Yeah, we'll get into it one of these days. But Here We Are is a very interesting dichotomy of like really good songs and other songs that are super forgettable.
Yes. And In Times of Roman is good too, but I think Starcatcher has a lot more lasting value than any of the other albums.
I think I'd agree with that for sure. I think my contention was maybe, but Here We Are, but... Yeah, I'd have to sit down and think about it some more. But
anyway,
any of those albums, except for maybe 72 Seasons, I'd have to think about it some more. I haven't maybe only one listen kind of passingly, but Jesus Christ, man.
Yeah, This Is Why was a terrible album.
And it's borderline pop.
Yeah. It's definitely not what I think of when I think of rock.
Yeah, that's a fucking travesty, man, but whatever. Anyways, this album's cool. The artwork is... out there, it's not as cool as some of the other stuff. It's Josh kind of dressed up in like his biker jacket and looking kind of sideways at the camera.
It kind of gave me a vibe of like a Walking Dead character or like...
Yeah, very Negan.
Or like if it could be an album cover for 21 Pilots when they're doing something with like Trench.
Yeah, I totally agree. I actually really like this title for the album too because the album is very personal, Josh. It's a... bit of an exposition on like what's going on with him, just dealing with shit in life, and the whole bit is that life is hitting him like in big bold letters in Times New Roman, clear to see.
I didn't even pick up on that. I thought it was a hilarious album title name.
Oh, I didn't find the comedy, and I don't think this is a very funny album.
Well, no, but when you think of fonts, everyone always tells you when you were in school, and they're like, "We need this to be double spaced in Times New Roman."
Yeah.
Like from that aspect of
it. Yeah, I hear you. But yeah, so let's get into this one. Opens up with Obscenery.
I think it's pronounced Obscenery because it combines obscene and scenery.
All right. Well, you know, that's two tracks now. We'll get one of it right.
I think I got this one right.
You might be 2 for 2 and I might be just batting 0. This one kind of feels like it harkens back to a classic funk rock sound, but twisted, heavier. Again, a very, very Queens of the Stone Age thing to do. Funk guitar kind of buzzed up, women background vocalists through the chorus, mid-tempo. Josh, he's traveling the vocals really well, like just getting up and down and holding notes. And some of his better work on the mic. I like this as an open.
Yeah, and I was reading like the play on obscene and scenery combined is that there's so much stuff that's going on, or at least for Josh, and even in the world where that it should trigger an emotional reaction, but you're so just tangled up in what's going on in like life that it just falls into like the background scenery.
it's a bit of paralysis, but not paralysis by analysis, but one of those things where like you shut down when there's like so much going on around you, you just kind of shut down to like manage it.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Next one. Paper machete. I love this one too. This, at least the song title. It's really, really cool.
I love the song too. It's like, yeah, it's got that classic Queens feel to it.
I know. Yeah. Very 2000s pop rocky tuned down. Classic Queens. Quick, heavy, choppy chords, complex, quick drums. Vocals mostly in the higher level, lit like trickling into higher range stuff. You know, guitar work is awesome. Troy's killing it. Kills the solo here. But overall, just the energy, the vibe, the danciness to this one is cool.
Yeah, and we haven't said this yet, but pretty much every track on this album, it has something to do with Josh and his ex-wife splitting around this time.
Yeah, right. They had recently been divorced, and you know, we had mentioned Emotion Sickness a couple times earlier in the album, which is a super hard-hitting song we'll get to in a minute. But yeah, a lot of talk about the divorce and kind of how that's affected his life.
Yeah, and in Paper Machete, he sings, "You speak lioness and damsel in distress so fluently. You sculpt, you change, you hide, then you erase," which I thought was a cool line. But yeah, this song's classic riffs, solos, faster pace. This is like vintage Queens of Stone Age. Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah, meat and potatoes.
Absolutely. Next one, Negative Space. Slower, kind of chunky, bluesy track. Vocals are more airy and accusatory, it feels like. It's got a bit of that tinge of, like, danger or, like, yeah, danger is probably a good word for it. Picks up the sick hollow guitar in the chorus. It's a vibe that just, like, grabs me. The song fucking rocks, too.
I love this. I love the chorus in this song when he's singing, "I'm drifting away as the world turns. We'll never get back to where we were." And, like, the way he sings that, "we'll never get back to where we were," I just, I don't know. I love the chorus. This is another good song off the album for me.
It's a, I read an interesting quote from Josh about this album, too, where he was like, "Yeah, a lot of these songs are about the divorce, and I'm never going to speak negatively about my ex, or the mother of my children," was the way he put it. But I have to talk about what's going on in my life. And so it's a tricky, it's a fine line you're walking there of not bashing her, but also at the same time, like, being open and honest about it.
Sure.
Which is a cool, it's a cool perspective, because it would be very easy to just be like, "ah, fuck her," you know, like. It's cool. It's a grown-up perspective on this.
Well, definitely. And I had read part of the reason they got the divorce is Josh's struggle with alcohol and substances still, which, yeah. You know,
yeah, it's tough.
Tough, yeah.
It's just what's been going on for a long fucking time.
I was going to say, too, it's crazy when you think of, like, struggling with something like that for, like, over half your life. Like, that's I couldn't imagine.
Yeah, I mean, we're
gotta be hard.
Lucky to not have that problem. Yeah. But there's so many guys in this business that just end up this way, man. Like, I just started thinking about Chester again. Like,
yeah,
it feels very similar to Chester as he, you know, as the later albums come along, and he's still struggling with it, trying to get over it. He's got kids, he's got a wife, you know, like, trying to get over it. And I guess two paths diverge, right? You got Josh, yeah, who's figuring it out still, and Chester who couldn't take it anymore.
Yeah, I couldn't imagine.
It's tough.
Yeah.
Next one, Time and Place. this is a very dancey pop rock track. Simple, hollow, plucky guitar, thumpy low bass, poppy drums, sweet, smooth vocals. It doesn't quite get to like a super, super dancey sound. It's a little bit lower than that. But it's fun, and it would be cool live to hear this one. I could see a crowd going nuts like for this one.
Yeah, he's got a really cool verse where he sings, "I realize you're like a bummed cigarette, suicide in slow motion. You're such a drag. All that's left is a decent butt. Your promises are smoke. I see you inhale." So that's a really clever play on words for smoking a cigarette.
All that's left is a decent butt.
Yeah, that's that was a very funny line.
Imagine her listening and be like, "hey, fuck you." All right, next one. Made to Parade. This one feels like a slow foot stomper. Again, in a smaller indoor venue, I can see the floor shaking for this one. Deliberate guitar chops, marching style vocals. The drums, I don't know how the drums match up for this one. It feels like they're, I don't know, it just feels like not out of time, but out of place for this track. Where, like, you get that marching vibe, and you'd almost expect a bit more whooshy, kind of quick drums. It feels like the drums are kind of just doing their own thing, playing a very standard rock cadence. Which is interesting. It feels very Queens of them to do that.
Yeah, and they have a lot of songs where they'll play it in like 7/8 or 3/4, like just different tempos.
Right, right.
Which is pretty unique. And the last 2 minutes of this song, it's pretty much like the last 2 minutes are just an outro, but the last 2 minutes are really catchy.
Yeah, man. I mean, it's not my favorite song, but there's parts of it where I'm like, yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely one that I had saved. And lyrically about people not realizing that they're giving all their time to work or being held back by something else in life and just kind of going through the motions, which is relatable.
Sure.
Yeah.
All righty. Next one. I got this one down. I'm going to say it right. Carnivore.
Perfect.
Kind of like 70s prog rock here. Low, kind of sad vocals. Strikes me, again, very British sounding. The string section, the vocals, the low kind of traveling guitars. Drums are awesome here. Whoever's on drum kit, and it's hard to say because it feels like they get a new drummer for every fucking album. But whoever's on drums here is kicking ass. It's a sad track. It's got a like beat up vibe to it, but I do like this one a lot.
I do too. I really like the middle part of this album a lot. This is pretty deep lyrically too. It's just dealing with the idea that nothing in life lasts forever. Everyone dies and there's nothing you can do about it. So you might as well smile and enjoy it, which is a little bit of a break on like the nihilistic view that they've had the last like two albums or so.
Is it?
Well, I mean, in the chorus, like he's singing, like, you know, you might as well just smile, which is,
yeah, it's a happier note for sure, but I think it's still a nihilist. It's like a optimistic nihilism. Can't control anything. The world is a kind of collection of randomness.
Sure,
chaos.
Sure, but this is the first time, or one of the first times, they're sprinkling in the optimism on it.
Yeah, yeah. No, you're right about that for sure. All right, good track there. Next one, What the People Say. A funny play on words. Anyways.
John Party's rolling over in bed right now. He didn't think of that one.
Oh, man. there's another play on words there that I haven't quite come up with yet, but John Party is definitely like, yeah, that's a banger.
You know, he just sits around for an hour every week, and he's like, man, what can I?
what rhymes with orange? Oh, man. This one struck me as very British, very The Clash again here. Strutty, kind of bumpy, old school pop rock. Thumpy bass gets a lot of shine, like very prominent on this track. Vocals even sound like he's doing the British accent again. But it also has this tinge of like a haunting vibe where it's the guitars that give us this danger. And then the lyrics are kind of dark too. Keyboards wobbling and adding to that vibe. It's interesting. There's a lot going on here, but it's a cool track.
Yeah, not one of my favorites. He's singing about like the lawless days of when he was a teenager growing up in the desert.
Yeah.
And there's just all kinds of crazy stuff going on.
Yeah.
But yeah, for me.
All righty.
The next one is Sicily, which is like this really weird, like sexual kind of song.
This is a weird song title. It's actually a terrible rock song title, in my opinion. I don't get it at all. I would imagine there's some story associated with this, but for the average listener, what the fuck? Again, I kind of agree with you. I'm not a huge fan of this one either. It's got this like simple cowbell that just kind of carries the beat. An odd cadence on the mic. The guitars are just kind of blurring in and out on it. It's out there. It's not really for me.
Yeah, same here. The next track is one that you've alluded to a couple times throughout this episode. Emotion Sickness.
Yeah, I mean, I want to lean on you a little bit here because the lyrics to me are just gripping is probably the best way of putting it. But musically, it's kind of this bluesy psych rock track. You know, the main verses are very bluesy. It's got a little bit more spaced out, kind of chunky riff into a softer, trippy chorus. It goes from slightly heavy to slightly light, kind of on a, you know, turn of a screw. Vocals are doing a lot here. Some of his best work vocally, and I would imagine that because it is so personal to him, he felt a little bit, maybe a bit more invested on doing his better work on the mic.
100%. And when they were in the studio recording this, he was struggling to get like that good vocal range at first. And I guess Dave Grohl came in like drunk when they were recording this. And the producer's like, look, man, like you can't come in right now. Like you have to, this is like a super personal song. Like just trying to get the vocals right. Like you got to go. Like they kicked Dave Grohl out of the studio.
Dave. Hey boys, what's good?
Yeah.
Josh, they're like a tear in his eye.
I mean, yeah, this is like probably the most prominent song about the divorce. And he's got a great metaphor in here where he sings, a dose of emotion sickness I just can't shake, then my fever broke.
Yeah, I mean, there's just a lot of really clever lines here. It's a mix of, like, regret and acceptance at the same time.
Yeah.
It feels like he goes through the whole, like, gamut, the five stages of loss or whatever it is, you know?
Yeah.
Where he has to, like, he remembers the good times, he realizes that those are over, and he has to move on, he has to let it go.
Yeah, definitely.
It's really cool lyrically. It's an absolute must-listen. But yeah, great song off this album. Probably my favorite song on the album.
Mm.
Next one. Last one, Straight Jacket Fitting. We're back to that very STP sound here. Very Stone Temple Pilots with that chunky, like, blues to the bone, hard rock. Slower, kind of mid-tune, slightly cleaned up guitars, sweet, comforting vocals. Heavier bits kind of mixed in, but it's mostly settled in that mid, just very simple blues sound. Again, there's a lot lyrically here too that's super, like, revealing and deep, and I think this is a great way to close out the album and a great standalone song.
Yeah, it's a 9-minute closer. It does mention in the lyrics, "In Times New Roman, no allegiance," so he does get that in there to close it out of having the album title in the last song,
right,
to some capacity. And yeah, like you said, lyrically, I kind of took away from it, like, everyone's living life in a repetitive motion and it can make you insane. And as the song, like, progresses, the lyrics get more and more pointing towards, like, try and break free from that.
Right, right.
And at the end of the song, he's singing, like, "I'm so goddamn sick of this place. Bring on the healing." So trying to, like, break free and kind of move on, which fits with the concept of the album of dealing with, you know, divorce and loss and moving on from things in life.
Yeah, it's a really cool way to close out the album. Surely a 9-minute song isn't for everybody, but I did like it.
Definitely.
Alrighty, so that's all we got. It's probably going to be a minute until they put out more music, so nothing to really look forward to there. But with that being said, you want to get into kind of concert set list, songs, albums?
Yes. While you are still wrapping up your stuff, let me just read this tweet I just saw that made me laugh. Neil deGrasse Tyson was critiquing the thumpers and sandworms in Dune Part 2, saying, "You can't thump sand. If you do this to sand, nobody else is going to hear it. They have the worm thing go straight fast. No, that's not how physics work. They got to curl." Like, what a nerd, dude. Shut up. Just let people enjoy things.
Fucking nerd.
Someone quote tweeted and they're like, 14-year-old Neil deGrasse Tyson, "You can't stuff me in that locker. The proportions of my body are too large to make such an act possible." What a loser, dude.
I have another Twitter thing that I want to get to, but maybe it's better we save that for the Taylor Swift episode. It's kind of related to Taylor Swift in a way. I'll tease that and say Antonio Brown is an absolute must follow on Twitter. All time follow. Alrighty, let's go ahead.
What do you want to do first?
Let's do albums first. Why don't you go ahead? I'm gonna put in this last song.
So,
give me something here.
Yeah, this is tough. Even looking at this list now, I still feel like I don't have it 100% right. But I have Villains as my least favorite album. Again, I think I only saved two songs off the album. The sound's just not for me. After that, I have the debut self-titled, which I'm not sure if I like this. I might still want to swap it with the next one, which is Eris Vulgaris, which really is only here because of Make It With You and Threes and Sevens. If they didn't have those two songs, it would probably be last or second to last on the list. Then I have, and this is where I'm a little bit more confident, In Times New Roman, and then Like Clockwork, which I think those two are very in a similar level. And then I have, for the top three, I have Rated R as the third, and then Songs for the Deaf, and then Lullabies to Paralyze.
We have on incredibly different lists here, and I'm actually, now that you're mentioning it, I'm thinking about it some more. I'm going to make a quick edit.
I just love when I was doing, like, my top 10 songs, there's like five or six songs from Lullabies to Paralyze that I really had to decide, like, which ones of these am I going to include. I just love that the sound of that album, like the up-tempo rock, it really does it for me. And I Songs for the Deaf too, I really love that too. Like, that's a great album, a great sound.
You had those one too, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah, okay.
No doubt there. Those are great albums. Classic. Like, in the spectrum of 2000 rocks, like, some of the best works of the decade.
Yes.
All right. The other six are very different from yours. So I'm going to start with Eris Vulgaris. I take two tracks from that album and move on. Next up, self-titled, then 6, Rated R, 5, Like Clockwork, 4, Villains, 3, In Times New Roman, 2, Lullabies to Paralyze, and then Songs for the Deaf at the top. I could probably switch Villains and Like Clockwork interchangeably. It's a very fluid situation going on there. But I do like both of those albums. It's not that they're bad albums. I'm struggling to pick between the two. I guess Like Clockwork is a little bit longer, which is nice. But there's something about the fun, like, dancey vibe on Villains that I do love. So,
yeah,
that's that. All right, you want to do opener and encore?
Sure. Let me just scroll down here. Yeah, so I think you could go a lot of different ways with this, too. But for my opener, I have In the Fade off of Rated R. And then for my encore, I have No One Knows, Songs for the Deaf, Make It With You, Eris Vulgaris, and then Little Sister from Lullabies Paralyze.
How many songs is that? 5?
No, it's 4. Oh, I was just reading the album names after.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah, was listening. All right, I can dig that. My opener, I'm going to open with 3s and 7s, just really get the people going. And then going into the encore, I'm going to start with No One Knows. And I'm gonna keep the little Mexican radio bit at the end. I'm going to move into Emotion Sickness at 2 on the encore and then close out with The Way You Used to Do.
Okay.
All right. I like that. Songs. Give me your top 10 here, Joey.
Yeah. So this was really tough trying to come up with the 10.
Yeah. This there's just having just done this, I was like, wow, this is fucking hard.
Yeah, let me just – so I'm going to read, like, my 4 honorable mentions that were next up. I have I Appear Missing, The Blood is Love, I Sat by the Ocean, and The Lost Art of Keeping a Secret. And then from 10 to 1 here, I have Long Slow Goodbye, I Never Came, Little Sister, Gonna Leave You, In the Fade, Go with the Flow, No One Knows, Make It With You, 3s and 7s, and then In My Head.
Again, very different list, but I think that's anytime this happens, it's a bit of a testament to the artist.
Yes.
My 10 to 1 here, 10, The Evil Has Landed, 9, Battery Acid, 8, Go With The Flow, 7, Feel Good Hit of the Summer, 6, The Way You Used to Do, 5, Emotion Sickness, 4, Burst It Giveth, 3, No One Knows, 2, 3s and 7s, 1, Song for the Dead.
Oh, okay.
Love that. The riff is classic, man. I fucking love that song.
Yeah, it's funny. I know that's one of like the top 5 most streamed.
Yeah.
And you know what's also funny is Feel Good Hit of the Summer would be a great way to open a concert.
I was thinking about that, yeah, too. I was really debating between 3s and 7s and that.
Just because it's not a lot, like, for them to just belt out the couple lines in the chorus, like.
Yeah, and it instantly gets the people going, too.
Yeah, and it lets the band get into it, right? Like, yeah, they don't have to come out doing anything crazy.
You can just have Troy, like, just rip that riff over and over and over until the band's ready to go and then get into it.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and you could. Because it's such a simple song, you could stretch it out. You could do whatever you could shorten it. You do whatever you want.
Right.
With it.
It's a very easy, like, you can get right into that very, very easily.
Yeah.
Yeah. Agreed.
But yeah, this is definitely one of those groups where anyone you ask is going to have a different top 10 and even albums, I think.
Yeah.
Other than, I think.
I think Eris Vulgaris and Self Titled are probably mutually agreed in the bottom half of their catalog.
And I think it's agreed Songs for the Deaf is like.
Top tier.
Top. 1 or 2.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everything in between, it's up to the listener.
Sure.
I think we were both pleasantly surprised by this artist.
100%. Yeah. This was a great one.
One of the few occurrences where neither of us really know what we're getting into going into it.
Oh, I thought you did.
I knew maybe 3 or 4 songs.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Same.
So pleasantly surprised. A good find and a lot of adds to the playlist here. So it's cool.
Yeah. Definitely a good gem.
Yeah, yeah. It's not a diamond in the rough. These guys are loud and proud. So, alrighty, guys, that's all we got for Queens of the Stone Age this week. Follow us on socials, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, and TikTok @FlipTheRecord. Like, review, subscribe on Apple and Spotify. Thanks for listening.
Catch you on the next one.